It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Tomorrow at 12 noon, Dr. Linda Haldeman will be joining us to talk about the Omicron variant. She says the most controversial thing about the Omicron variant is to pronounce it Omicron or Omicron. That's direct from her. So that kind of lets you know it ain't that big a deal, folks. What's a bigger deal is Trans-Siberian Orchestra in a concert that I've been ballyhooing for a month is not going to be joining us tonight. And that's left a lot of you really upset and sad, like me. Others are a little bit mad, just a few. You go, well, a Sacramento show's happening. Here's what's going on. The individuals that were diagnosed positive with COVID-19 were not performers. They're members of the crew. The crew that sets up the show. This is a 28-truck show. Everybody in the crew has a specific, highly trained position in setting this elaborate show up. If you've seen the show, you know how elaborate it is, with guitarists floating in the air over your head playing Christmas music. I mean, it's very elaborate. And when it was announced late in the game yesterday that some of the pit members, excuse me, the crew members, had COVID-19, there was not the time to bring out replacement crew members from the other shows, the B and the C team. As I understand it, there's an A team tours one side of the country, a B show tours the other side of the country, and there's even a C show in rehearsals for future shows. And yeah, there are that many in the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. When you talk about a local show of 80 to 100 people, there's really 300, 400, 500 people involved in the whole Trans-Siberian experience. So this is a show with extensive staging and lights and pyrotechnics and special effects. There are 28 semi-trucks. It takes certified specialists to get the stage set up, which is why they start at 4 a.m. and go till showtime. These are not jobs that can be filled on a local level. It has to be somebody who has done their shows before. And they couldn't get anybody here quick enough to get this show loaded and on the road and up and running for tonight. You know? And you got to remember, this type of production has to have a massive approval from the fire marshal. So, you know, they couldn't just post on Facebook, hey, we need to hire a couple of people to... No, that's not the way it works. I get it. I totally get it. There's the situation of how many staff members over there at the Save Mart Center are losing money because they can't work. Not to mention the hardship this is taking on the entire tour, because basically they're risking their health by going out on tour because of COVID-19, and they just lost an entire city on their tour, and that is not freaking cheap. This is going to hurt them very badly, their bottom line. This is such a massive show. The you know, make or break bottom line is a thin one, and to lose an entire show on the tour is going to hurt the whole tour. So, God almighty, I can't imagine what they're going through. They have to be totally destroyed that they're not doing this gig tonight. And I got it from, you know, Al Petrelli, who we talked earlier, who's like the number two guy with this organization since the very beginning. I mean, he still performs with them. This is a favored market because of the reception they get here. And I also got the word, too, that anytime I flap my jaws, ticket sales went up. Thank you for that. Thank you for trusting me. And that was noticed, too. So there was a special affinity building near the end of the, you know, the week waiting for this particular show to happen tonight. And now it was destroyed because of COVID. Nothing else. You know, whenever there's a bailout at the last minute, it's always like, oh, well, weak ticket sales. And they had to dream up something. Weak ticket sales? I don't think so. No. And a show of this nature just can't bail. I mean, even if they're like only sold four tickets, it's more to their bottom line to just go through with the show and pray that they can make it up on merch a little bit. Certainly not the whole thing. So there it is. This is why we're not getting a Trans-Siberian Orchestra show this year. Typically, it's every other year for Fresno. They'll be back next year. They're going to obviously break that one because we didn't get it this year. And I just hope I'm around for next year. I should be. I mean, you know, it's just a remarkable feat for the eyes and the ears, and every sense is given a real treat when the Trans-Siberian Orchestra is in town. And it's going to be sadly missed by many of us who are Gigungas fans. This for many. And you've said the same thing reading on Messenger and on my email. You said the same thing that I have. You know, you're waiting for this show to kickstart your Christmas mood. Well, don't let this destroy your Christmas mood. You know, let's just get heavier on this disease and go after it and get rid of it so we don't have to deal with this stuff. Right? Right. So that's why, you know, these were crew members, and they can't be easily replaced, period. Had there been a 2 or 3 day luxury, absolutely. Could have flown them out there from wherever home base is. And I have no idea where home base is. I mean, for many of these touring shows, like the circuses and all that, it's Florida because of the weather. I don't know if that's where they're based out of, but remember how the old Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus, had Circus Red and Circus Blue, you know, touring the country at the same time? That's how it is with this group. That's how it's grown, you know, into something that large. And I can only imagine what it takes to manage that kind of dog and pony show 24/7 when they're on the road on both sides of the country. Man, I told you yesterday about a scientific discovery of a mammoth tooth on the coast of California. I mean, it's not that unusual to find a mammoth tooth in California. Go up to Madera. I mean, right up the road there, where there's a lot of excavating for them. At one time, mammoths were stomping all over Madera. But scientists have found a 3-foot-long, pristine tusk of a woolly mammoth that's more than 100,000 years old. It's been preserved in the cold ocean depths. How do you spot something like this? This tusk was first spotted a couple of years ago during a Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute expedition exploring a seamount of 185 miles offshore, 10,000 feet deep, with a remotely operated vehicle. Now, you're 185 miles out in the Pacific Ocean. You're 10,000 feet deep, and you find a mammoth tusk? What are the chances of that? Now, the team was only able to collect a sample at the time, but they returned this year to grab the entire tusk at 10,000 feet. All right. Sure. Steve Haddock, who's the senior scientist with the Monterey Institute, and I was just at the aquarium last weekend. Remarkable. He says, you start to expect the unexpected when exploring the deep blue sea, but I'm stunned that we came upon the ancient tusk of a mammoth. Haddock and the researchers from the UC Santa Cruz Genomics Institute and the Department of Earth Science and Planetary Sciences at the University of California, Santa Cruz, where I went to school for all of 2 weeks back in 1969, along with the Museum of Paleontology at the University of Michigan, are examining the tusk. And the team believes it could be the oldest well-preserved mammoth tusk ever recovered from a region in North America. And they plan to examine the ocean currents to try and pinpoint where the tusk originally came from. Good luck on that. You know, the researchers have confirmed that the tusk is from a Colombian mammoth, well-preserved by the cold, high-pressure environment of the deep ocean. And the specimen's deep-sea preservational environment is different, I'm quoting now, from almost anything that we've seen elsewhere, says paleontologist Daniel Frazier, who specializes in the study of mammoths and mastodons. Other mammoths have been retrieved from the ocean, but generally not from depths of more than a few tens of, you know, meters, not 10,000 feet. That's amazing. So there it is. And I rather imagine being preserved at that depth. It's in pristine condition. So that's a remarkable story of a mammoth tusk found off the coast of California. And again, I mean, this is like a needle in a haystack. You're 185 miles out. You're 10,000 feet down. You're just doing la-di-da with a remotely controlled vehicle, just looking for anything you can find in the way of something unusual. We make discoveries in the ocean almost every day of the week. We know more about the universe than we do our own oceans. You're aware of that, aren't you? People say that a lot, and you think, oh, yeah, right. Oh, come on. No, it's true. And to see a mammoth tusk 200 miles out, 10,000 feet below, I can only imagine what they were thinking. You know, was this mammoth on a raft? Did he have water wings? No, well, obviously it was probably a landmass at the time, or it was close to the coast, and it was it died and the currents carried it out. Who knows? But that's a wild story, a wild one. More coming up on the very wild Ray Appleton program at News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJnow.com.
It's free.
You know, we've seen Alec Baldwin on television as of late talking about what happened on the set of that movie called Rust. And his big one now is he didn't pull the trigger. Okay. How does a gun fire if you don't pull the trigger? There's a weapons expert that points to a possible explanation how live rounds got on the set of that movie, again called Rust. And that's the big one. I mean, how did the live ammo get there, regardless if Baldwin used his finger or not? There's a search warrant affidavit filed Tuesday for a New Mexico film prop firm indicating live information, ammunition on the set of Rust may have originated from a very storied, legendary stuntman named Thel Reed. Now, Reed is the father of the Rust armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, who has been under scrutiny for her role as a caretaker of firearms in the set of the production. She apparently was very undertrained to be in such a position for a film that using guns, weapons. And the filing indicates that Thel Reed, who is an armorer himself and one that is incredibly well known, did not intentionally provide live rounds, but the ammunition he took to an earlier, separate production maybe made its way onto the set of Rust. Now, the Rust director of photography, a young lady named Hutchins, last name, 42 years old, was killed. And the director, Joel Souza, 48, was injured when the actor, Alec Baldwin, who's also a producer of the film, accidentally shot them before an afternoon filming session. And he says he didn't pull the trigger, but that's another story. So Reed told authorities that he'd taken an ammo can of live rounds to another set earlier in the summer at the request of Seth Kinney, who's a movie gun supplier who is affiliated with the New Mexico prop firm PDQ Arm and Prop LLC, the target of Tuesday's search warrant filing. Reed and Kinney worked together on an earlier production, according to the filing, and Reed told the investigators that Kinney had asked him to bring live ammunition for actor training with live rounds at a firing range, according to an affidavit for the warrant filed by the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office. Now, Reed's statement said Kinney had already had live ammo, but thought he may run out. And that's according to the filing. So Reed said, all right, let me bring you another can filled with as many as 300 rounds, it says. And the rounds of ammunition, including .45 caliber, were left over after the production, and that Kinney took them back to New Mexico, the filing says. When Reed repeatedly tried to get the can and the ammo back from Kinney, he was rebuffed and ultimately told to write it off. So Thel stated his ammunition may match ammunition found on the set of Rust, the affidavit says. Reed and Kinney did not immediately respond to any requests or comments. Isn't this interesting? What went wrong here? So investigators want to search the New Mexico business associated with Kinney, presumably to find out where that can of ammo went, which Reed describes as not factory made. So the filing says that the Rust prop master Sarah Zachary said the ammunition for that production was from multiple sources, including rounds that Gutierrez Reed had brought from a previous production, and that some were provided by, quote, another person. And it's not clear from that narrative if it fits the one about the live rounds and the previous set, although it looks like there could be a connection there. So according to Tuesday's filing, Zachary told investigators that she checked the box of ammunition on the prop chart after the shooting and compared it with the rounds that she was handed. The suspected live round from the gun that Baldwin fired. Zachary said she found some cartridges in the box that would rattle, which signifies they were dummy rounds. Others, however, did not, which led her to believe some were actually live, according to the filing. So, the shooting happened on October the 21st, after Baldwin was handed a gun that he was told was safe to use. Investigators said in a previous affidavit that, yes, indeed, this was a safe gun, etc., etc., but they said he was practicing with a gun when it went off and it killed the director of photography. Santa Fe County Sheriff Aiden Mendoza said the gun fired a live round, which killed Hutchins, wounded Souza. Sheriff's investigators recovered the blanks, the dummy rounds, and what they suspect were the live rounds from the set. Now, Jason Bowles, who's an attorney for Gutierrez Reed, the daughter, again, of Fel Reed, who may have supplied the live ammo to another set, said the search warrant was a huge step forward to unearth the full truth of who put the live rounds on the rust set. Another attorney for Gutierrez Reed suggested that early in November that somebody may have sabotaged the set. But why? The producers of Rust have said little. In October, they said in a letter to cast and crew members, as the investigation continues, we cannot respond to the comments that have been making their way into the media, on social media, and elsewhere. And so goes the story of where the live ammo may or may not have come from. This armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, has taken a lot of crap for being the caretaker of the firearms. And it would be so sad if the live ammo came from her father, who is a legendary stuntman and armorer, Fel Reed. He's been working on movie projects forever. He's very well respected. He's the go-to guy. Apparently, his daughter is not the go-to girl. I mean, there were problems with her at the very beginning of this shooting of the movie, you know, pardon the pun. She's not nearly as experienced as her father. She is undertrained. But did that result in the live ammo making its way onto the set? I don't know that it does. I don't know that that says anything about her abilities and the live ammo. So the truth lies somewhere with this guy, Kenny, who requested the live ammo from Reed, the father, and then all of a sudden lost the can of up to 300 live rounds, 45 caliber. Lost the can? Really? He said, you know, told Reed to write it off, and then somebody gets killed with one of the 45s, allegedly from that can, 45 bullets? Something's a little weird there. So think about that, sleuth away, and maybe you guys can figure it out. All right? All right. Again, I'll remind you, tomorrow at noon, Linda Haldeman. It's been a long time. Obviously, we'll talk about Omicron. And the more we hear about that, the less I think there is a worry. If you're not vaccinated, I'd be worrying all the time, but that's your choice. Vaccinated, you know, hopefully it can protect us. We do know that the couple that went to South America and allegedly brought the first case of it into the United States via San Francisco, and they're only identifying really one person as having it, although I'm sure that's not the case anymore, that, you know, self-quarantining. And the symptoms were very, very light, and that individual is doing well, and, you know, that's that. That's what we keep hearing about Omicron, is the symptoms are different, yet nobody wants to explain what different is. At least I haven't seen it yet. But the symptoms are very, very light. They're very mild if you've been vaccinated. Very mild. And that's why we get vaccinated, right? So, you know, I mean, to keep us out of the hospital, basically.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
Now, Ray Appleton.
Well, the voice of remorse. Who would that be? Would it be Chris Cuomo? I doubt it, but, you know, the embattled, if you want to call him that, CNN star, he addressed his suspension publicly for the first time yesterday, and some of his words, they went like this.
Hey, everybody, it's Chris Cuomo. Let's get after it. Quick note about the obvious. I've been suspended from CNN. Do me a favor, cut the music. Thank you. You know this already. It hurts to even say it. It's embarrassing. But I understand it. And I understand why some people feel the way they do about what I did. I've apologized in the past. I mean it. It's the last thing I ever wanted to do was compromise any of my colleagues and do anything but help. I know they have a process that they think is important. I respect that process. So I'm not going to talk about this any more than that. So for right now, let's just get after it. And there's plenty to do.
Yeah, but without you. Plenty to do without you. Let's get after it. What'd he do? Well, I mean, obviously he used his media ties to investigate for his brother some of the accusers. And as I said earlier the other day before, you know, push came to shove, and I said they probably wouldn't react to, you know, they being CNN, they wouldn't react to this, that, you know, it's not illegal. Is it unethical? Yeah. You know, if I had done this here at, you know, KMJ, good old Mother Mary from Cumulus, who's a wonderful person, would have booted me out on my big fat white keister Prado without any other thought. And I wouldn't have been indefinitely suspended. I would have been fired. You know, goodbye, see you later. We don't want you anymore. Thank you for your 34 and a half years and all the money that you've made us, but get lost. Because it's just very, very uncool. But I don't have a brother who's an embattled former governor of New York, and that's not going to happen. But I wouldn't have done that anyway, just, you know, for fear of getting caught, as he did. And the problem with Chris Cuomo is he thinks that he's so big that he's got a big Superman star on his chest. Nothing's going to happen to him. Now, in the beginning, I thought, he's probably toast. He's gone. But no, he's the only ratings they have. And I've been telling you about that 10-minute to 15-minute handoff every night between him and Lemon on Lemon's newscast, because Lemon's newscast, you talk about a goose egg for water in this area. That's exactly what his ratings look like. He doesn't have any. And the only way that he has any is through that long trade-off, that long handoff between him and Cuomo, where they look like, you know, kissing cousins every night. And that gives Lemon a little bit of a lead-in for his first quarter hour. And that way he has some numbers. But it's basically a gift from Cuomo. Now, I mean, what does he get? Nothing. He goes back to being zero man again at CNN. So, you know, transcripts of Cuomo's interview with the state investigators indicated that this guy, you know, would reach out to media sources to find out about his brother's accusers before they came forward publicly. There were a lot of text messages also indicating that he did a lot of snooping. A lot of snooping, a word that the investigators use, not me, snooping on journalists about upcoming stories that would make his brother look bad. And he relayed that information to the governor's aides, the then governor. And Cuomo's admission in this newly released testimony also contradicted what he told CNN viewers back in August when he claimed, I never made calls to the press about my brother's situation. Well, he did. And he lied. And for that, he should be fired permanently. His initial statement declared, the New York Attorney General's office released transcripts and exhibits Monday that shed new light on Chris Cuomo's involvement in his brother's defense. This, again, is the CNN statement. These documents, which we were not privy to before their public release, raise serious questions. When Chris admitted to us that he'd offered advice to his brother's staff, he broke our rules. And we acknowledge that publicly right now. We also appreciated the unique position he was in and understood that his need to put family first and job second was not sufficient. However, these documents point to a greater level of involvement in his brother's efforts than we previously knew. As a result, we've suspended Chris indefinitely pending a further evaluation. So you got an in-house media reporter over at CNN. His name is Brian Stelter. He's since speculated that he could return to the network as early as January. But a spokesman has told Fox News that that was speculative and nothing will be definitive until after a long review. So liberal news organizations, women's groups, journalists from all over the political spectrum, and women who've accused the former governor of sexual misconduct have called for CNN to permanently part ways with Cuomo. Now, why would liberal news organizations want CNN to permanently part ways with Cuomo? And why would they be telling him to do that, telling CNN to do that? Obviously so they can hire him, the liberal news organizations, whoever they may be. I mean, sure, believe me, if he was fired permanently, one of these, I bet you one of them, and we'll never know who they are, one of these so-called liberal news organizations would hire him faster than you could say Jack Splatt, you know? Real quick. Women's groups, yeah, I get it, because he was snooping on the women that were accusing his brother of the hanky-panky. So there are, you know, groups out there, women's groups, liberal news groups, other journalists who you would have thought have been a Chris Cuomo fan club, and at one time they were. But with this one, no, they pulled the plug. They pulled the plug, and they've said get rid of him forever. And we'll see what CNN does. Do they have the gall to do that, knowing that he's the only guy with any ratings they have on the network? All they have to do is change their programming just a little bit, and they'll have ratings. I'm telling you, this is not about personalities. It's about content. It's about content, period. And with better content, better programming, more fair programming, more middle-of-the-road programming, and this can be said of a lot of different news agencies, even Fox to a degree, you know, things would be better, period. Rather than, you know, Chris Cuomo making everything about him. Me, 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 me. Me. I mean, he's such a me character, it's sad. Very sad. All right, break time. As it's very sad, it's near the end of my program because I love doing what I'm doing. We will continue in just a little bit here on News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ, and the Ray Appleton program now in its 35th year.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
Ray Appleton. Now.
Right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
All right. I mentioned this earlier, and couple of you hit me, you know, back saying, all right, that's a little morbid when I mentioned this in the monologue about Kyle Rittenhouse and his AR-15. My intent was not to be morbid. Again, my thought, Kyle Rittenhouse says he's going to destroy the AR-15, the weapon that he used in the fatal shooting of a couple of people last year, you know, at a racial injustice protest in Kenosha. And that whole thing was turned into a racial act, even though everybody was white. So in an appearance on a podcast, he said Tuesday the gun was being destroyed right now. We don't want anything to do with it. Just getting rid of it. And he's 18 now. As you know, he was acquitted of the felony charges related to his actions back on August 25, 2020, during the protest, you know, which was over the shooting of a black man, Jacob Blake, by a white Kenosha police officer. And remember, I mentioned a week or so ago that there was one liberal podcaster out there who said that Kyle Rittenhouse was the individual who shot Jacob Blake. I mean, was that person confused or what? I mean, there were so many things said about this. He went over state lines. He should have never owned the gun. He was too young, blah, blah, and, you know, all of it debunked. Anyway, he was charged with a reckless homicide, and he was, you know, found not guilty of it all. So, photos of Rittenhouse holding that AR-15 in Kenosha, widely circulated. He claimed he was trying to protect property during the unrest when he fired the weapon in self-defense. We've all seen the videos involved with the individuals he shot trying to chase him down and do something to him. So in this podcast, Rittenhouse said that he wanted to be a police officer from a young age. He wanted to be able to help people. He also talked about taking a stand, saying, my reason for taking a stand is I wanted the world to know, you know, who the real Kyle Rittenhouse was. Taking a stand, you know, taking the stand literally in the courtroom is what I'm talking about. So he criticized the Kenosha County Assistant District Attorney Thomas Binger. God, what an idiot that guy was. He is, for pointing the AR-15 during the trial with his finger on the trigger. I even get it when I'm holding up one of my dummy guns at home on a Facebook picture and I have my finger on the trigger. I mean, you guys let me have it, even though it's a dummy gun with a lead-filled barrel. I mean, I get it. I understand that. You don't know that until I tell you, so... Mm-mm. But this was not a dummy gun that this guy was holding up. So, stupid DA. But the gun, I thought, why not? Why not? It's too late now because it's allegedly been destroyed. But why not auction it off and take the money and give it to, like, widows and orphans of police officers, you know? And some of you thought that was a little morbid. Yeah, here's the gun that was used to kill the two jerks, you know? You know, if you look at it that way, maybe it is a little morbid. But I just thought it would be good to take the gun and put it to some good use, you know. And there are some of you that is, well, it was put to good use. Well, you know, without all the opinions on all of that. And it's a dead issue now because the gun, like I say, supposedly is destroyed. But I would have thought it would have been a good idea to capitalize on it in a way that made money for particular groups that may have needed it. So just yeah. But I just wanted to clarify, you know, there were only two of you who thought my idea was a little morbid. And if it is, I apologize. That was not my point. I was not trying to sensationalize it or freak anybody out. I just thought it would be a good thing to, you know, make some money for somebody. Trying to take a lemon and make lemonade, you know. The young kid who did the shooting in Michigan, Ethan Crumbly is his name. He's 15 years old. He was accused of opening fire at his high school. He pleaded not guilty yesterday to one count of terrorism causing death, four counts of first-degree murder, seven counts of assault with an intent to murder, and 12 counts of possession of a firearm in the commission of a felony. Oh! Now, he's a sophomore who's being charged as an adult. So there. And he allegedly fired more than 30 rounds in the hallways of the Oxford High School on Tuesday before 1 p.m. He killed four students. He wounded seven others, including a teacher. He appeared in the Oakland County Court by video yesterday, slumped over in a vest, a white mask, and glasses. Wow. Mark Keast, who's an assistant prosecuting attorney in Oakland County, told the judge that he doesn't have words to describe how horrific the surveillance video of the shooting is. He methodically and deliberately walked down a hallway, aimed at firearms at students, and fired it, period. After children started running away from the defendant, he continued down the hallway, again at a deliberate and methodical pace, pointing and aiming inside of classrooms and at students who didn't have the opportunity to escape. So the judges ordered him to be held without bond. He's going to be transferred to the Oakland County Jail, where he'll be separated from the adults. Tim Willis, lieutenant, told the judge that Crumbly recorded videos on his phone the night before the incident in which he talked about shooting and killing students the next day at the Oxford High School. Further, a journal was recovered from Ethan's backpack, also detailing his desire to shoot up the place, including murdering students. His parents went to the same school. And they also went back to the same school about 2 or 3 hours before the shooting to meet their son and the school officials over behavioral issues in the classroom. Quote, the parents were brought on the morning of the shooting and had a face-to-face meeting with the school. The content of the meeting obviously is a part of the investigation, but we did not learn of that meeting nor the content of that meeting until after the shooting and during this investigation. So this kid had problems from the get-go. And he used a 9mm 6-hour, by the way, if you're curious. What went wrong in that kid's head that caused him to act out the way that he did? Sometimes we never know. We never, ever know. All right, I have to scoot, and I do thank you for hanging in today. Skip and Philip are making their way in here to clean up my mess, and I left a huge one. I usually do. But no, I clean up after myself. I clean up well. So anyway, you have a good one, and I love you. Stay safe. I'll see you tomorrow, Friday. Dr. Haldeman joining us at noon. That'll be a good one. We haven't talked to her in a while. And right now, it's Michael Dermanuel Jr., his daily take on news. And it goes like this. Bye.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit. And you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.